Thank you for downloading the Three Beards Soccer Podcast, a Baltimore-based soccer show focused on the English Premier League and the footballing world. Please follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, username at Three Beards Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards EPL podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. He is a co-host, Dr. Pete, famous of Tottenham fandom. Dr. Pete, we have a special edition tonight as the Champions League final took place today.
Last game of the club season, baby.
Yes, we're on to the World Cup after this, but before we do, we're going to break down this game. We're also going to break down the FA Cup between Chelsea and Manchester United, the FA Cup final, that is. Not nearly as eventful of a game as this Real Madrid versus Liverpool match.
Yawns all around for that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was Jose Mourinho versus Conte, so that's the way it was going to be. Anyways, I'm sure Tyler wishes he was on this one because he was texting me all this stuff about Chelsea versus Man United, and so I banned him from the podcast. Basically, only thing I could do. I said absolutely not. And then Ken and I had a big disagreement about who played better and who was the better team. So a lot to talk about. Definitely with the FA Cup, just much more with the Real Madrid versus Liverpool Champions League final, Dr. Pete. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well, this final had everything. I mean, drama, goals, gaffes, one of the best goals we've ever seen in a Champions League final.
Yeah, absolutely, especially for the occasion. Last year, you'll remember, we had a goal from Mario Mandzukic that was a pretty sweet goal where he chested it up and did like a bicycle kick. Pretty amazing goal, but in the end, Juventus lost that match. And same opponents in this one as Real Madrid were going for their third straight Champions League final, or win, excuse me, winning. They would have won four the last 5 years, what they're going for. No one has ever won three Champions League finals in a row, but there have been teams in the past, in the 70s and the late 50s, early 60s, teams that won multiple European Cups in a row, which is kind of similar.
Yeah, you like to honor history, and you know, it's interesting to go back and look and compare teams in different eras, but it's pretty difficult to do, and I think it's safe to say in the modern era, the amount of quality teams has gone up dramatically, and to win this thing 3 years in a row, I mean, it's really just unfathomable. It's incredible.
Four of five from Ronaldo as well. His fifth Champions League trophy, one with Manchester United, four with Real Madrid. I mean, that kind of dominance is crazy. And you can say, with the exception of maybe this game, Cristiano Ronaldo has been the absolute center point of all of those Champions League runs.
Yeah, pretty amazing he didn't score today. I wonder what the odds were in Vegas if you wanted to put money on Ronaldo scoring in the final. I mean, it had to be probably 2-1.
Yeah, because he scored in all the finals. He's just been absolutely unbelievable. But in this one, so there are different storylines to follow. You have Zinedine Zidane and his team losing out to Barcelona by an absolute mile in the league. Barcelona, of course, was almost unbeaten, but not, as they lost in the 37th game, I believe, 36th game. And they were blamed for all this, you know, Champions League loss that they took when they were up big on Roma, and then they ended up losing. So Barcelona, you have to say, they get their league win, but everybody wants a Champions League. And now the Real Madrid board are in a position where they're going to have to figure out what do they do next with Zinedine Zidane. I mean, I think today, some of the quotes that came out, Dr. Pete, they could be interpreted as, if you fire Zidane, we're leaving. Did you hear some of the quotes that came out afterwards?
I didn't see the quotes that came out about Zidane, but, I mean, you would have to be insane to fire Zidane at this point. Because, I mean, who are you going to replace him with?
Yes.
All the best managers are getting snatched up right now, so you're miles behind in that regard. So firing him would be one of the dumbest, you know, coaching replacement decisions I've ever seen. I wouldn't put it past Real, though.
Yeah, so that was one of the storylines going in was that this was Zidane's only chance because they finished so far out of the league. And I can't figure out how they finished that far out of the league, but they did. And on the other side, you have Liverpool, who finished in fourth in a kind of a strange season where they had, you know, they played pretty poorly through about halfway through October. They were in ninth or tenth place.
Calls for Klopp's head. Remember that?
They were starting. I mean, it was still a patient process for them, which is actually impressive in this day and age for a club to give a manager time. He did finish in fourth last year and put them in the Champions League this year. So there was patience, talk of patience, but the defense was a sieve at the time. And they'd gotten smashed by Manchester City, just like everybody else did during that time period. But they were letting up bad goals, and a lot of them were on, you know, dead ball set pieces. The center backs weren't holding their own. And then, you know, they made some adjustments, to Klopp's credit. They made adjustments in the back line with the back four. They moved Karius into goal. And
he signed Van Dijk, obviously.
Yes, and then in January they signed Van Dijk, and they honestly played pretty well, even defensively, from then on out. They seemed to do better with their defensive structure, but they still were getting these weird games where they would drop points, like the West Brom game where they were up 2-0 and ended up dropping points. So the for them, they were always a team that was going to go out and try to score more than you, and it worked really well for them in their run as they took out Manchester City in probably one of the most exciting games of football, that first 90 they played, City-Liverpool. Absolutely amazing. And, you know, just the goal scoring prowess. And then, of course, the excitement of them leaving their back door open, essentially, and allowing Manchester City to climb back into it, even though they were up by what? They were up by three? Yeah. I mean, they didn't have the most difficult run ever, but they made it count. They made it to the final. And it was a big deal because Klopp has not won in any of the last six major finals that he's been in. That includes European finals, like a Europa League final. That includes Champions League finals with Dortmund as well. He has not won any of them.
Yeah, you're starting to see that narrative creep in that he can't win the big one. Same thing you saw with, you know, you're starting to see with Pochettino.
Yeah.
You know, the team plays well, but if you don't win trophies at the end of the day, that narrative is going to start to creep in, and sometimes it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, you had those storylines. You also had the storyline of Mohamed Salah, who's been absolutely outstanding for Liverpool this year, breaking the single-season goal record with 32 in a 38-game season. He's just been absolutely the model of consistency. He's exploded sometimes for four goals. He's been absolutely incredible in the box, especially from the 16 in. Just that little baby, you know, those little baby touches in the box, unstoppable, and just tight little finishes. Not a ton of, like, long shots, just mainly messy goals, for lack of a better description, and to be lazy.
Yeah, he was an incredible story this season and drew in fans from all over with his play, and to see him go down 20 minutes into the final, I mean, I can't even imagine how Liverpool fans were feeling when they saw him go down and knew he was coming off. I mean, absolutely gut-wrenching, and you're essentially watching the worst moment of his life. You know, yeah. He will never have a worse moment, especially if, you know, well, he's thinking at that time that he's thinking in his head, I'm probably going to miss the World Cup, or at least I'm in danger of it. So, I mean, that is probably going to be the worst moment of his life.
It's not a bad worst moment, all things considered, but that is the way these superstar athletes are. And Loris Karius will disagree, because he will tell you, Dr. Pete, that there are worse moments that you can have in your life.
Oh, my Lord.
Let's talk about, before we talk about the Salah injury and what exactly it did to the game, let's talk about the lineups to start with, and there's such a stark contrast in the lineups. Starting the Liverpool bench, there were 8 goals, Dr. Pete. 8 goals for the season coming off the bench.
8 goals? That's
8
it?
8 goals. That is correct, coming off their bench.
That's probably like what Gareth Bale scored in the last month and a half.
Gareth Bale had 4 goals in the last month coming into this, and as we'll find out later, he added to his total. Yes, he was very close to matching their goal output in the last month, theirs for the season. Another couple things of note, Trent Alexander-Arnold, the outside back for Liverpool, is the youngest Englishman ever to play in a Champions League final, which is pretty impressive. Andrew Robertson, the Scottish outside back for Liverpool, he has 5 Champions League matches to his name. Cristiano Ronaldo has more Champions League hat tricks than Andrew Robertson has Champions League matches.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a stark contrast in the amount of experience between the two teams. Liverpool didn't have any players who've played in a Champions League final before.
Yeah.
And, you know, Real's obviously been there. I thought it was very interesting that their lineup in this year's game was exactly the same as their lineup in last year's game.
Which, exactly the same, 100%.
Yeah,
100%
which for same. A team of their caliber and, you know, teams like in the top 5 in Europe, I mean, there's so much turnover.
Yeah.
You know, at least turnover in the sense that they're going to sign players. And to have the same exact lineup as the year before is really incredible. And the year before that, there were only 2 differences in the lineup. So they've really had a ton of consistency. And I think, you know, experience in big games, and that was borne out in this game. And at the end of the day, sometimes it's not the best player on the field that matters. It's who has the worst player on the field.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. You look at this Madrid starting lineup, this Real Madrid starting lineup. Just like you said, 100% the same from the year before, which is incredible. And you think about the Real Madrid teams of the past, the way they were structured. You know, they talk about the Galacticos, which of course was an idea that Real Madrid would go out and buy the very best players on the planet, regardless of where they were and regardless of what they cost. This is like the David Beckham purchase from Manchester United, Ronaldo Lima, those kind of purchases, just basically buying teams to compete and be the best players ever on the field. Zidane was the most expensive transfer ever when he moved to Real Madrid from Juventus. This idea that Real Madrid will buy all of their talent, and I think that is actually the thing that is most impressive about them. The reason they've gotten to 4 finals in the last 5 is because they've done the opposite of what they had done in the past. They have allowed their players to become comfortable every offseason. They did have an offseason where they were banned from transferring, by the way, so that bears noting. But at the same time, Zidane has gone out of his way to calm the Real Madrid storm that circles around the team all the time, from the presidents and their elections for the team, which is a public election. The presidential elections and the power struggles that go on, how each manager gets fired after 35 seconds on the team. I think Zidane's biggest asset is his understanding that players need to be settled. And he allows that every year by saying, you know, we're not going to get rid of our players, and we're not looking to go out and buy and replace these guys that had 25 goals because they didn't score 30. You know what I mean?
Yeah, his ability to manage star players, which is, you know, definitely a skill that not all the best tacticians have. And there are massive egos on that team. I mean,
probably the most massive ego, maybe not in sport, but the most massive ego in soccer.
I wouldn't limit it to any sport. I would say biggest ego on the planet.
Yeah, very, very Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's a well-earned ego, but it is a monster ego.
Yeah, and I really think that the fact that they've considered firing Zidane is the biggest joke to me in the world. I mean, obviously they're used to competing for league titles, but the dude's won 9 trophies in the 2.5 years that he's been there. Obviously came on the middle of the season, and he's won 3 European Cups in a row, which no one else has done. So,
yeah.
I mean, what else is there left to do? I'll tell you what, if they fire him, there will be 50 teams lined up to fire their coaches if he says he'll come.
Coaches that have probably just signed deals and stuff, like, oh, yeah sorry, bro. Like, Zidane said he wants to come here. I don't know what else to tell you. And the coaches are probably like, oh, I get that. Yeah, I get that. I understand completely. It's fine. Yeah,
yeah.
It is incredible what he's done. And he's honestly calmed down, you know, Ronaldo. Ronaldo does have a massive ego, but when you have a player who was a manager that was so good as a player, not that long ago either, so world-renowned, you know, led France in 1998 to a World Cup, led France in 2006 to the World Cup final while he was 35 and about to retire. And they exited his own way, Dr. Pete. Just headbutted an Italian. I mean, he scored in that game, though. It was a PK, but he scored. Like, that tournament run was incredible. His years at Juventus, his years at Real Madrid as a midfield maestro, it buys a lot of credit, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think there's a level of respect when he walks in the door as opposed to a manager who, even if he's had success at another club, I think you're right. I think Ronaldo looks at him and says, okay, this guy's was a great player. He's won a lot of things. And obviously he's good at managing egos, like we said. So.
Yeah, so the Madrid lineup, the same as before. The questions that came up from that, Gareth Bale has been in really good form, but I do believe that Real Madrid has been rotating. They've been playing Gareth Bale more because he's not in their starting 11 because of his his injuries. But he is a player, Dr. Pete, that can come through and he can score a spectacular goal. He scored in, I think, two of their other finals. Last year he came off the bench as well. He didn't score in the last years. But he does score goals. He does have a magnificent talent base to work off of. And, I mean, talk about a super sub.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the difference in the two squads to me, you know, looking at him before the game, it was in the goalkeeper position and it was on the two benches. And that's ultimately what decided the game. I mean, if you have Christian Bale coming off the bench.
Bale. Stop that. That's Batman. Batman is not coming off the bench.
Just edit that Gareth one out. Gareth Bale. This is not a Marvel podcast.
Oh, that's great. Gareth Bale coming off the bench.
And I just lost my train of thought.
You were saying if you have Gareth Bale coming off the bench.
Yes, and Asensio coming off the bench as well. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely. Those two players are better than half of Liverpool's team.
Yeah, and that's why we're bringing it up in the first place, the lineups. You have Adam Lallana coming off the bench for an injured Mo Salah in the 20th minute, and Adam Lallana has hardly played this year, like hardly played at all. And you're replacing a player who has been in the top three this year in the world, you know, and arguably top two. Like, I mean, Ronaldo didn't do very much in the league this year. Not even a contender in the top 10, I believe, for European Golden Shoe, which is most goals in Europe. Not a top five contender anyways. Mo Salah carried his team consistently, which takes a lot of skill to not get injured. You know, in the English Premier League, you're getting smacked all the time, especially if you're a player like that. And it's just really bad luck that he went down the way he did. His arm got trapped underneath Sergio Ramos. Was reading some articles that say, you know,
yeah,
Ramos is
I'm not
whatever.
Sure if I would use the word trapped.
He got held, Thomas. And they were going down, and yes, Sergio Ramos, like, wrapped himself up in Mohamed Salah. Boy.
Yeah, I like that better. Trap sounds like 100% accident.
But yeah, we've all done that. Anybody who's played soccer or a sport has pulled another guy down with them.
Yeah, but if you watch it carefully, if you're watching it and you don't know Ramos' background, you might say, okay, that was definitely an accident. But he is a dirty player. And to me, there was some intent there. Not to, like, you know, hey, I wanted to break this guy's shoulder in half, but there was definitely, you know, they pulled this guy down and he could have let go of his arm. I mean,
he could have.
So I to me, there was definitely a little bit of intent there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's intent to me to grapple in the same way there's an intent in, like, the NFL for a defensive lineman to steamroll the quarterback and drop him on his shoulder. You know what I mean? In the same way. Like, it's the dark arts. That's the best way to describe it. It's the dark arts. And like you said, Sergio Ramos is aware of the dark arts.
A master
of the dark arts. And he could be teaching it Hogwarts? Question mark. Sorry, that was terrible. That was terrible. All right, so Salah goes down the 20th minute, and you get a guy who's been injured for the whole year coming off the bench. The electricity of Salah leaves, and you get Lallana, who's good on his day. But to me, is this, Dr. P, is this the turning point in the game? Is this the most important incident of the game?
There's no question that it was the turning point in the game. Most important incident is tough because I think Karius' mistakes are really what ultimately lost them the game. Because, I mean, they were hanging in there after Salah went down. But it definitely changed the psychology of their team. It changed the momentum. I mean, it was just a dagger for them. And I think it's just psychologically, it's got to be hard to see not just the fact that he's a soccer player in the sense that he's gotten you that far, he scored so many goals, but like the guy is gone, he can't play in the final, he's in tears.
Yeah, he's
probably not going to play in the World Cup. I mean, that's got to rattle you.
Yeah.
You were completely focused on the game before all of a sudden, it doesn't take much to lose your focus.
Yeah, especially in a game this size where you have all the background that goes into it. You have 2 weeks to prepare for it, 2 weeks to answer questions from the media, who all they want to do is dig something up. The game is so big. It's the biggest club match in the world every single year. And to me, we'll talk about this in our World Cup podcast, but to me, this game is more indicative of the best in the world, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah, the Champions League final is way more interesting in the sense that you've got guys who've been playing together all year, and it's the best soccer you're going to see. The World Cup is more exciting for different reasons, but the soccer's not better.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think it's more dramatic, more exciting, and the drama, again, it's another form of the word dramatic, but the drama that follows the World Cup obviously is mesmerizing, and it means more to the world, but this to the soccer world means more, the Champions League final. And you could see it. I mean, the teams were rattled a little bit. Even Real Madrid, they were a little bit nervous. You had Toni Kroos passing the ball out of bounds. Like, that guy's passing percentage.
Characteristic.
On the game, him and Modric, their passing percentages were 95%, which is absolutely incredible for a Champions League final.
Against a team that's full press.
Against a team with full
press. Very adept at intercepting the ball.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Let's get to the goals, Dr. Pete. I mean, what else can you say here? Karius, the Liverpool goalie, picks up the ball with a forward, Benzema coming at him at a jog, goes to do a quick rollout, and he rolls it out, and Benzema just basically intercepts it, and it goes in the goal. Like, he rolled it, Benzema was very close to him, and just hit the ball. He did not have make any contact with Karius. It was just an interception of a rollout, and just instant goal. Freebie in the 51st minute after halftime, 1-0 Real Madrid.
All I can say about that one, Thomas, is I have not seen that play since I was 9 years old.
I've never seen it. I have never seen that on any level, ever. Like, I've seen guys try to toe poke away like a drop kick from a goalie, which is illegal, and you get a yellow card for it. Ronaldinho did it a couple times. That's illegal. You can't do that. But I've never seen a guy just like cleanly get the ball rolled right to him from like 3 feet away. I've never seen that in my life. And to do it in the biggest match of the year, when all the pressure is on the goalies, all the conversation coming into it is that Liverpool is the underdog. Real Madrid have all these fantastic players. And going into the season, even Liverpool, it was, well, what are their goalies going to do this year? And Mignolet was replaced by Karius, who was playing so much better and with confidence, hadn't made any giant clangers. And then to do that in the most important game of the year, I mean, what do you do? Like, what do you do? Honestly, what do you do?
I don't know exactly what you do, because having a performance like that at that level, I mean, there's no explanation for it. There's no excuse for it. And, if you're a Liverpool fan and your team's worked that hard to get there. You watch every one of their games. I mean, they'll never forget that for the rest of their life.
No, that's the way Champions League lore works. Like, you don't get it. People talk about Edwin van der Sar in the Champions League final for Manchester United, like, saving penalty kicks. Like, that's not really, I mean, the goalie is not favored there, so anytime he blocks one, he's a hero. But it's still part of the lore, you know, getting people in Istanbul with Liverpool being down 3-0 and coming back and winning 4-3, and the way that that happened, that's part of Champions League lore. And now part of Champions League lore is Karius's clanger against Benzema, and then a little bit later, maybe even worse, not worse, but really, really poor positioning, everything you want to talk about in the second Bale goal. I mean, in between, though, let's talk about that, Dr. Pete. Sadio Mane scores 4 minutes later, which is pretty incredible considering how poor Liverpool conceded that first goal. To come back and score is pretty incredible.
Do you think Sadio Mane was the best player on the field? Bale scored twice. He was a player of the game, but he was only on for 30 minutes. Like, for the course of the whole game, do you think?
Yeah. I think
Mane was the best player.
Mane was, yeah. I think so, yeah. Which is pretty incredible. I think he was.
Yeah, he's
amazing.
He's baffling to me. You watch him, and he looks like he's two steps faster than everybody on the field. And I just don't understand with his skill set how he's not more dominant.
It's inconsistency. That's really it. I mean, that's another skill, you know, being consistent, keeping your level at an 8 out of 10 every single week. And you know, Mane's a guy, it's not like he's inconsistent from game to game. He's a form guy in general. He won player of the month, I believe, in September, early in the season, because he was so good. And then he was terrible once Salah started coming through in like November and December. Like, he disappeared, which is odd. But in this game, he was absolutely electric when they needed him to be, and he deserved his goal. It was off a header, and he deflected it in, but it was intentional, and the goalie probably would have gotten the header.
Yeah, no, he made a nice run, and to me that actually looked like a design play, because he kind of popped a little bit more air under that corner kick than you normally see, and Lovren got a nice running start, and for as much crap as we've given Lovren all year, it was a great header over Ramos, who's phenomenal in the air.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was designed play to head it to the back post, and Mane was in the right place at the right time. It was a really nice goal, got him back in it.
Yeah, Klopp goes ape, obviously, trying to fire the crowd up, which, by the way, it should be noted, seemed to be more pro-Liverpool.
Definitely more red in the crowd, and
more
cheers when they had the ball, more jeers when they didn't have the ball.
Yeah, and they were all over them. The Anfield faithful were all over Real Madrid, whistling when they had the ball. I mean, it seemed like it was about 65%, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think they really drove Liverpool in the first 20 minutes, and I thought Liverpool was a better team in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, they were. And then, Dr. Pete, Gareth Bale comes on, and it's not an upside-down Wayne cake. It is Gareth Bale. The thing that's amazing about this bicycle kick that he scored is that the ball was not floated. It was bent in with a little bit of zip to it, and it was behind him. Like, I mean, what an unbelievable play. It was a stretch that he had to do a bicycle kick. And he is left-footed, and he put it away left-footed, and just, I mean, there's no way anyone else could have gotten to that ball. The athleticism, it's Cristiano Ronaldo all over again, but again, I mean, it's in the Champions League final.
Yeah, people were trying to figure out which goal was better, and it's honestly really hard to say, because that Ronaldo's might have been a little bit more athletic, but the pure physics of Bale's kick was mind-boggling. If you look at a still photo of him right after he kicks it and the position he's in, like, you'd be like, this is insane. There's no way this could get into the goal. Not just get into the goal, but get over top of a keeper. I mean,
yeah, not Karius's fault here. It's just
Do you think it was the best Champions League final goal you've ever seen?
Yeah, probably. That one last year from Mandzukic was pretty ridiculous. But I mean, you talk about the timing of the goal, the athleticism of the goal, like all that combined. I mean, it gave them the title.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, probably for me. I mean, I think it was the best one I've ever seen. In 2000, I can't think of a better one. So Gareth Bale scores in the 64th minute, a star next to that goal. And it's 2-1, Dr. Pete. Liverpool starts making some moves here. They start bringing in players. Emery Chan comes on for James Milner. He's supposed to be gone. He's supposedly already signed for Juventus. I know Ken thinks very highly of Emery Chan. Not a lot you can do when you come in this late in the match. And don't really play. And I wonder how much of the him not starting is his lack of commitment to Liverpool, seeing as he will probably be gone as a free agent.
Yeah, he didn't really make any impact at all.
No, I didn't really see him do anything. In the 83rd minute, though, Gareth Bale gets a pass. Don't forget about
Mane's shot off the post.
Oh, that's right. Mane did hit the post.
He single-handedly tried to, you know, carry Liverpool through the game after Salah went down. It was an impressive singular effort on his part.
Yeah, I think the game loses a lot for having Salah not in it. But, I mean, in all honesty, the storyline isn't Salah. That's not the thing that's on the headline of every paper tomorrow. You know what I mean? Gareth Bale cuts inside from the right, blasts the ball on his left. He did blast it from about, what do you think, 25?
Yeah, I think it might have been 30.
Absolutely hammered the ball, hit the right around the center of the ball. It didn't rotate. It did knuckle. It was a very, like, difficult shot to track. That being said, I'm not a world-class goalkeeper, and I'm not a below-average goalkeeper. I'm a terrible goalkeeper. And I think Karius might be a terrible goalkeeper, too, because this ball, he's standing there, his gloves are together, and the ball just barely nicks his hand and goes into the goal. Without any kind of deflection, without any kind of screen, he just couldn't track it and couldn't keep it out of the net.
Yeah, it was one of the worst goalkeeping mistakes I've ever seen on one of the biggest stages, and there's really just no excuse for it. I mean, he was the worst player on the field, and at the end of the day, as good as Gareth Bale's goal was, you know, he was the difference in the game. Ultimately, no. Salah, you could say what if for Salah, but I don't even think Salah being on the field is going to overcome those two mistakes against Real Madrid.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think that someone could have a howler like that. I asked most of my friends that follow soccer closely and watch the match, I said, is that the worst performance you've ever seen in a major match that includes all across all sports? I was trying to think of a worse one. I mean, we have kickers who have missed kicks in football. You have players in basketball who haven't shown up in big matches, big game sevens and stuff like that. We say that, of course, Dr. Pete, as the Warriors and the Rockets are playing right now. It looks like the Warriors are flying ahead. But again, Dr. Pete, is this the worst performance you've ever seen in a major final championship, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's got to be, just because, like you said, you could pull half the people off the street, probably could have kept that from going in the goal.
If it hit them in the face, it would have kept it. It would have kept it out of the goal.
If you just stood there and just let it hit you in the face.
Yeah, if you let it hit you in the face, that's not in the goal. Yeah, I mean,
but for a world-class, supposedly world-class keeper, that is just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. It's unbelievable to have an athlete who is paid to do that just have a clanger like that. And really, both of those were on the same scales. Those are co-ed mistakes, co-ed goalie mistakes, and I've never seen them in co-ed, Pete. I've never seen that. So, I mean, they may not even be that. Like, it's horrific. I feel bad for Liverpool fans. I'm a Man United fan. I didn't want them to win. Spoiler alert, I did not want them to win. But at the same time, like, I understand what it means to win. I understand what it means to lose. And I've never had a loss that is because of a single player just making those kind of mistakes before. Two of them in a single game. I've never had a loss that's been so, you know, it's just been individualized so well and so defined so clearly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it was like, in terms of, if you're talking about individual versus a team effort, it was like the U.S. effort that got them knocked out of the World Cup on that last day.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that level of terrible, terrible performance. But obviously it was a single individual, so.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen it like that before, just having a single player be that bad. In soccer, goals are worth so much. And to have a single player be culpable for both, that's in the biggest match of the year, is pretty incredible. So Gareth Bale scores in the 83rd minute with the assist from Karius here. The game from there was over. There was not a whimper after that from Liverpool. They were crushed. They were beaten. Basically, Madrid had their way with the ball, with the time-wasting tactics. Really not an issue after that.
Yeah, Christy Baby almost got his goal. But
he did.
Other than that, nothing to speak of in the last 20 minutes. And, you know, you go down 2 on Real, they're pretty masterful at killing off the game.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. You know, the game's over. Everybody's celebrating. It's incredible. Bale is the center of attention, not Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, Bale was in front of all the cameras, fixing his man bun, like, you know, making heart-shaped signs at people like he does when he scores. And then what does he say right after the game?
He says, it was fun winning all these trophies. I'm out of here. I'm going to go to a place where they're going to play me every week.
Yeah, well, I understand that sentiment, but Gareth Bale has been hurt a lot. It's not like he's just getting picked. It's like he misses like 40% of the seasons, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, he misses a ton of the games. And on top of that, Dr. Pete, I'm pretty sure he's in the top 5 in the world in wages. So there's like 3 clubs that can afford him, and most of those clubs already have guys in the position he plays and or are not in the market to buy a player who's going to miss 40% of his games.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see where he ends up. There's a lot of different factors, like you said, that come into play, but there just aren't very many teams where he can go to and get starting time. You know, if Man City signed him, he's not going to crack that lineup.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Somebody else said Man City for Bale, and I was like,
Who are you going to sub him in for?
Who are you subbing him in for? Exactly. It was the same thing. Somebody said Hazard, and I'm like, Hazard's amazing, but why would Pep break up the band? You know what I mean? Like, he's got guys rotating in there that play his style, and why don't, I mean, Hazard's amazing, but I mean, they're not going to change that up. There's no need to. All those guys are young too. Those outside wingers of City. So yeah, Bale says that. And then Ronaldo had a little something to say, Dr. Pete.
Yeah. Ronaldo said he's not sure where he's going to be next year, but he seems to say that
he does.
Know, every
as
year.
Soon as he possibly can, he puts pressure on Real Madrid. As soon as he possibly can. He said, I've really enjoyed my time at Real, is what he said. It's been fun. That's what he said. And after that, there was another press conference after that, and he said, I didn't mean to take away from the spotlight of the game. I shouldn't have said that. He did not apologize. He just said he shouldn't have said that, which means I had something to say. I just mistimed when I was going to say it. But honestly, with the politics of Real Madrid, I understand why these players are protecting themselves. Because it's, you know, what have you done for me lately? And, you know, we fire everyone. And I'm wondering, which is what I was alluding to earlier in the show, Dr. Pete, is if this isn't a way for these guys, these stars, to be like, you know what? If you fire Zidane, you can fire me too. And Ronaldo has the most power in Real.
Yeah, I would find it hard to believe that Ronaldo would, I mean, stick up for Zidane in that fashion. Ronaldo is much more interested in what he's going to get for himself, and if
he does
want
a raise.
Yeah, well, he always wants a raise, and I think that he's probably If I were Real, I'd actually let him go. And my reasoning for that is, you know, if you let him go in 2 years when he starts to flame out and he's a huge problem because he's not being played or he's not happy, then you won't have to deal with that. So you've already gotten all of his best years out of him. I mean, how many more good years do you think he has in him? He's got so many miles on his tires.
33.
He's 33 years old. Obviously, he's still playing at a world-class level. But, I mean, Father Time don't stop for no one, and it's coming.
Except for Tom Brady. You're wrong. Tom Brady told me that. He doesn't believe in aging. Tom Brady said that. So, yeah, I mean, I said this before. We're going to close up the Real Madrid talk with this. I don't want to be the team that has to be on his downside. You know, I don't want to be the team that has to put him out to pasture. I don't want him to go to Manchester United and have the 33-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo and maybe get 2 years that are incredible. I still don't want the years 3 and 4. I don't want them because that's going to be a vortex.
I'm not even sure if that 2 years is a guarantee.
I mean, look at LeBron James. I mean, he's the same kind of guy, the same kind of level, and he's defied all of that. He's 35, right? I think he's 35. And he's defied all that. And we are at a point in sports where we do have guys that are stretching it. It's not like baseball in the early 2000s, late 90s, where you have a 40-year-old hitting 70 home runs and being the best player in the world by a long shot, and he's 40, 41, 42, 43. Doping has... It's still there, and I'm definitely not saying that Cristiano Ronaldo is doping. What I'm saying is that advanced technology, advanced medical technology has extended a lot of these players, but now we are back to a normal timeline for athletes, which means they are winding down at 34, 35. That stretch that we saw in the 01, 02, 03, 04 in just baseball, that's not something that happens, A, really ever in soccer, and B, happens in sports anymore.
Yeah, and like you said, you may get a couple more years out of them, but I think that's the most you're going to get.
Yeah.
And when you're catching his downside, it's whatever team that is, it's not going
to
be.
It's a vortex. It's going to be a vortex. It's going to be negative, and it's going to be gross, honestly.
One other question for you before we move on from Real. This would be a nice way to wrap it up. So do you think that this is one of the, let's just say them over the last 3 years, do you think they're one of the greatest club sides of all time? Or do you think that, I mean, one thing I would say is that this year was definitely one of the greatest runs tournament has ever seen. So in their group, they had Dortmund and Tottenham. And in the knockout rounds, they had PSG, Juventus, Bayern, and Liverpool. So those last four teams are comfortably top 10 teams in the world. And Tottenham, you can argue.
Right around there, yeah.
Yeah. So, by the way, the only team that didn't get beat by them was Tottenham. But that, you know, that surviving that gauntlet and winning the final, I mean, that's definitely one of the greatest achievements in Champions League history.
Yeah, that's difficult because a lot of the runs that the champions make, they go through tough teams like that. But
not four out of the, you know, yeah, top the PSG, 10. Usually you get a couple. You
that's
get a
the
cup
big difference
here and there.
Yeah, the biggest difference is the PSG game. I mean, to play them in the knockouts and then immediately go on to have to play Juventus and then go to play Bayern when there are easier options available. It's one of the most difficult ever. I'd have to go back and look at the other champions.
There's no way anybody has played four of the top 10 teams. It's just, mathematically, it's not possible.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous run for sure. Your question about them being one of the best teams ever, I think is absolutely, they are in play for sure. Pep's Barcelona is there. Manchester United in the 07, 09, 08, 09, they're kind of in the conversation, but not really. I mean, I love them, but they're not with that Pep's Barcelona as they showed on the field. So they're not really in it. The treble winning team for United, 99, they're really good, but still, I don't think that they match up to Pep's Barcelona, and I don't think they match up to Zidane's Real Madrid. So, I mean, yes, for me, in the last 20 years, winning 4 of 5 is absolutely incredible, and yes, I do think that they are the best team, at least in the Champions League era.
Yeah, the only reason I give pause to saying that they're one of the best is because they haven't had as much success in the domestic league. I mean, they only won one title in those 3 years. And this year was a bad year for them by anyone's standards. So, you know, saying, is this one of the greatest club sides of all time, or are they just an absolutely the best tournament team, you know, as far as 3-4 year stretches that we've ever seen?
Well, I'll end it with this. We will actually end it this time. I think that they have the highest ceiling of any team in the last 30 years. Okay. The highest ceiling. That includes Pep's Barcelona. The quality that they play on their day is just absolutely incredible from front to back. And their sheer determination, which
they're just winners.
I hate to use a gray word like that, but yeah, they are absolutely, they're champions led by a champion. Mm-hmm. So all right, Dr. Pete, that wraps it up for Real Madrid versus Liverpool. Let's get into the FA Cup real quick, and it's a real slide down in terms of games, but I promised we would at least talk about it a little bit, so we will. 1-0 Chelsea over Manchester United. And Chelsea draws a penalty kick with Eden Hazard splitting open Phil Jones. No shout for a red card there for you, right?
No.
Yeah, just he went for the tackle. He went for the block. He mistimed it. It's a penalty kick and a yellow card.
Yeah, he ended up having a pretty tough year for you guys, I think. And that kind of summed it up with the PK there. But it was just, you know, the game was not the most exciting game, and to have a one on a penalty kick pretty much sums it up for me.
Yeah, they end up winning 1-0. Manchester United, I thought, played all right, but as I was telling Ken, I was like, Manchester United was like a 6.5 out of 10 in this game. Like, they were all right. They didn't play badly. They played better than Chelsea. Chelsea, to me, was about a 5 out of 10. But that's the way soccer works sometimes. You don't win. No Lukaku for Manchester United, which of course led to Jose Mourinho after the game saying that, I couldn't figure out what Lukaku was trying to do. I didn't know if he was feeling okay. He told me he wasn't ready to play, and he was alluding to the fact that Lukaku didn't want to play because he wanted to be in the World Cup.
I didn't hear that storyline. That's interesting.
Yeah, he said that, and he was just basically doing his usual thing. He said, that's why we need Lukaku to play, because our forwards can't play this style, and it's only Lukaku that can play this way. And then at the same time, he throws Lukaku under the bus. Just the cloud that follows Mourinho, man.
Well, Lukaku was probably watching the Champions League final and thinking, I'm glad I set that one out.
Yeah, well, he did end up coming in and not really doing much. He hasn't played, I don't think, in like 2 or 3 weeks. Didn't really do much, so maybe he was protecting himself. Mourinho, man, he was throwing bows. He said, yeah, we were the best team. The best team didn't win, but I still congratulate Conte. And then you know what Conte said? He actually took a quote from Mourinho, which I'm surprised more people didn't notice. He said, I can't help it. I'm a serial winner. That's what Antonio Conte said in his press conference. Of course, with Jose Mourinho and him trading barbs all year long, including one about Antonio Conte's his implants, his hair implants. I mean, he got the last laugh because he beat Jose, and it looks like he's going to get fired. I mean, all the odds makers have him getting fired.
It's no surprise that the after-the-game press conference was better than the game when it comes down to Chelsea and Manchester United. But I'm a little surprised. Are you surprised at all that Conte, we haven't heard a decision one way or another? Because I was absolutely convinced, like you were, that he's going to get fired. But if you were going to fire him, then you've already missed out on a couple of potential managers who have already taken spots. So What exactly are you doing if you're going to fire him? When is he going to get fired?
The only thing I can think of is that they were waiting to see if two things. One, if maybe Zidane would be available. That's a long shot, and I don't think you build a strategy around that, nor do I think they were. It was just like in the back of their heads.
Mm-hmm.
The real thing that I think is happening is that Chelsea is looking around to see if someone else is going to hire Conte because he's under contract, and they can actually make money off of that. If somebody wants to sign Conte and he doesn't want to resign and basically cancel his contract, they can actually make money off it. It's like a transfer. Jose Mourinho, I believe, was transferred from Inter to Real Madrid. He can be transferred. So they could make money off it. I think that's actually the answer, because the odds makers have Conte being fired pretty heavily, and then they have a former Napoli manager as the next one in there. So, you know, I think that they're just waiting to see if anybody reaches out to Conte. At this point, though, it would have to be Real Madrid, I think, because the Juve spot, it seems like Allegri's pretty solid in there. I mean, I guess Milan could come after him. We always thought that he would go to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they'd have to pay for him.
Yeah, so do you think they'll make that move before the World Cup or after the World Cup?
I think it's a poor decision to not do as much as possible administratively before the World Cup, because
there's not much time left after.
Yeah, we have a couple weeks. But as we've seen time after time, I mean, you have to get a transfer plan in order, right?
Yeah.
And you need your manager for that, although Chelsea does a lot of theirs with their, like, director of football and stuff like that. You still want his input on what kind of players he would like.
Or maybe you don't at Chelsea.
Or maybe you don't at Chelsea. That's true. You might just be asking John Terry. Like, he doesn't even play for them. Like, I don't know how they do their transfer stuff, but it, of course, put them in fifth place this year, how poorly they handled their transfer business. I think that you have to see... You have to put together a transfer plan and get these guys that you're trying to get before their prices inflate, because nobody's price goes down after a World Cup, but plenty of guys have their prices go up.
Yeah.
So I think that they need to get it done as soon as possible so that they don't do what they did last year and just buy a bunch of guys at the last minute. They have deadwood they need to get rid of for sure. Ross Barkley, I'm looking at you.
One more point about the FA Cup title. I really think that the FA Cup is nowhere near on the same level in terms of winning a league championship or Champions League.
No, it's not.
So many people put so much stock into it and say, oh, it's a trophy. But Arsenal won it last year. They're in tatters. Chelsea won it this year. They're in tatters.
Yeah.
It does not, to me, it has very little bearing on the future of your club. And sure, you can say what you want. Yeah, it's another trophy. But to me, I would rather be playing Champions League football next year any day of the week than winning an FA Cup.
Yeah, I absolutely would agree with that. It just goes to show that Louis van Gaal was fired days after winning the FA Cup. And I believe Conte will be too.
Agreed.
All right, so Dr. Pete, we have our World Cup podcast that is out now. That is it's a whole new pod, but it is Three Beards World Cup 2018 podcast special. It has Ken Lee, it has Dr. Pete, it has City James. I think that's probably all the co-hosts and hosts that we'll have. But we have done episodes 1, 2, and 3, which are Group A, B, and C, respectively. If you want to take a look at that, it is a separate podcast that we will be doing for the next few weeks. It's been awesome so far, Dr. Pete, even though we're only like 2 weeks away.
Yeah, I'm really excited. The podcast has turned out well so far. And
yeah,
honestly, I think your intros with the clips in various languages, I look
so
forward
fun.
To hearing
they're
each
so
one
fun.
Of them, because they're
yeah,
all
they're so
incredible.
Fun. Yes, yes, they are so much fun. I absolutely love them. I love putting them together. They're a ton of fun. But all right, Dr. Pete, so we are going to close it out here. Ken and I will be back with an EPL check-in in a couple weeks. I don't know. This World Cup is all-encompassing, and there won't be much Premier League news, so we'll probably just drop our tidbits in the World Cup podcast. But yeah, we'll be doing that. We're going to do previews group A through H. Is that how far it goes? It's eight groups, Dr. Pete. We're going to do the whole previews, and then we will be doing matches every other day during the 10-game stretch where there's three matches a day.
Two-a-days, baby.
Yeah, there are a ton. there's 3 days, Dr. Pete. Three
I know, days. I was just talking about, you know, practices when you had to do two-a-days and you threw up when you're running.
We had 3 days, like for real.
It's actually illegal.
I know. Well, it is now. I don't think it was then. It was horrible, though. God, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, so we'll be doing them every other day to cover all the matches, and it'll be a blast.
I'm very excited.
All right, Dr. Pete. For Dr. Pete and Kenley, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week.